Next is an excerpt of a morning walk given on February 6, 2000 in Innisfail.
You said you had a question?
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were speaking in the class, I was thinking of myself where I'm relating. Like, you hear in the material world how someone might start off with a shovel or something at the end of which, and I was thinking, I'm struggling to get up for the morning programme and things like that. How can I directly relate that to the actual result? That this is going to give me the result of preparing, like that to struggle, take it up and to perform the sadhana, it's actually going to bring the fruit. It's not something separate.
Yeah.
How do I get that, deepen that faith that this is part, this is what I... Instead of just going through the motions.
There's some Chinese proverb, a 10,000 mile journey starts with the first step. So you have to have faith like that, that, okay, that's one step, then two steps, three steps. Yeah, step by step, not like your Hanuman, one leap and you're there, but it may take more than one lifetime, but that's one of the favorable symptoms of bhakti in the nectar of instruction, that I have faith that the devotees teach according to bhakti that if you take this process, then eventually you'll make success, so I'll do it. You have to be patient. And yeah, well, you want to see some results, and I think you should see some results. You may be disappointed you don't notice as much as you'd like to, but if you are willing to accept that even a little bit has been made, you'll see that some good has been made, even in your life. So you say, maybe you're not able to go to the morning program, and you think, well, that's such a basic thing, I should be able to do that. But at least you've been able to give up. Well, you used to say that you gave up Murphy's and now you have Murphy. So you did that. That's a big step. Give up Guinness for Krishna's business.
You gave up beer, now you have cheer.
Seems like I'm doing like the first step has to be really important step, you know, like a firm step.
Yeah.
And then
it's okay. If we're lucky, we get a good start, a firm foundation.
And then it seems that sometimes the first step is the easiest step, it's the second step.
Yeah, keep going. There is that expression, the zigzag path of truth. I think I wrote about that in the Spiritualized Dictionary or somewhere. So, it comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we see devotees, they do things that aren't proper really towards their straight progress. And I don't know why, we don't know why they did it. And maybe it's not right. But then, then they have to come back and forth, and just but keep at least to keep going. And we should be aware, not just thinking of ourselves, but thinking of other devotees in our family or our congregation, and don't shun them, but try to encourage them to keep practicing as much as they can, even if they've zagged off the straight path. Then at least encourage them. You still, you know, in any way that they're still interested, fan that fire. They may say, well, I'm not interested in the straight path anymore. And then find out what they are interested in and help them. And then then you may zag off. And then they'll help you to zig back. we progress like that. The time is short in human life, and we should be as straight as possible and make as much progress.
In relation to that, Guru Maharaj, I was the other day asking for, Bhakti John gave me some help just moving something. And I said, after we were done, I said, thank you. And he said, he turned to me and he said, well, that's what we're here for. And it really occurred to me that that is what we're here for in a community environment, is to support one another, that we can come together and help each other through difficult situations. And you saying that,
yeah,
seems to be a strong resounding that when a difficulty arises, there's nothing like a friend.
Yeah. What's the name of that group in America, the religious group that they were, Amish? Yeah. They're very tight group. They don't try to proselytize others. And if somebody misbehaves in their group, acts irreligiously, they have this word they call shunning. We know, even in English, shun, when you shun somebody. So they shun a member of their group, and it's like a very strict thing. That person is kept out of everything, and they practically just wither and die because maybe they've committed adultery or some sin they consider unpardonable. That seems quite different than what Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita. Apichat siddharacharo bhajate mam amanyavak. So if we keep shunning and shunning, people will be driven away.
I heard that when they're teenagers, sort of before they baptize, they have also a different policy.
Yeah.
Called slipping the yoke.
They're given 2 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
In which they're considered, now you're not a member of this, you don't have to follow this religion at all. Just do whatever you want. And then decide if you want to follow it. They're completely released from all obligations. It may be an intelligent move. And then 2 years later, they make commitments whether they want to be part of the religion they were raised in. It's a calculated risk.
The person that told me about that said it was mainly for the boys. And then they said, with sort of a wink, they said, but the girls will bring them back.
Huh?
Saying that, you know, the girls will remain strict and the boys will come back. They're not worried about them coming back after a couple of years.
The girls will attract them back to marry them?
Yeah. That was his understanding of how that worked.
So they're wild oats. So it sounds like an almost cynical attitude towards human nature. ISKCON can't claim that it knows the answer.
Cynical, but they know the truth, but they're also, and the truth is a great ideal. They're idealistic.
Yeah. Well, I know the householders. So many I know whose children are still young. They so much desire that their children will grow up and be devotees, but at the same time they feel helpless to do anything to guarantee it will happen. It's sort of a poignant situation. What? That they're in. they're still willing to invest all that time in the hope that it will come about. That's real preaching and love.
Next is an excerpt from Questions and Answers, recorded on November 9th, 1999, in Newcastle, England.
In yesterday's disciples' meetings, we discussed how we are free to prosecute devotional service or not free. So keeping ourselves favorable to devotional service seems like an important thing. If I'm to continue doing it, so what does keeping ourselves favorable entail? Let me clarify this question a little bit. We read one passage that said that Krishna, or we could say Bhakti Devi, is free to come to us or not. When you chant Hare Krishna, she doesn't have to come. And you're also free to chant or not chant. You don't have to. So everything is free. Therefore, when you chant, it doesn't mean you get love of God automatically. But I said, at least what we could do is keep ourselves in a favorable attitude. Something like that, I said. So he wants to know more how you would do that to attract Krishna. Not that it's a law. I say five Hare Krishnas and Krishna appears, but is there something I can do? So I wrote, show Krishna we want to serve him by at least going through the motions. Now that's what we do when we chant 16 rounds. Well, I don't have any love, Krishna, but at least I'm doing them, see? And giving ourselves to it as much as possible. So Krishna likes that. Make your heart clean so there's a nice seat for him. If you want to receive Krishna, make it favorable. You can't leave a dirty place. And we've read those passages in Chaitanya Charitamrita when they cleaned the Gundicha temple. All the dirty things were cleaned out, and they're compared to a desire for popularity and worship and being a cheater and a liar. All these things have to be cleaned out, and then it's a favorable seat or a throne for Krishna. Give up other interests in favor of Krishna's service. Call for Krishna. You want to make it favorable, then call Krishna. Krishna, please appear in my life. Oh. Are we willing to do these things? Prabhupada says, if you want to keep everything the way it is and be Krishna conscious, it's without any changes, and it's not possible. You have to be ready to renovate, change, clean house. Any questions on that one? Yeah.
It reminded me of something I heard Prabhupada say once to you on a morning walk. He was talking to some disciples, and he was talking about how it's easier for young people to get to Krishna consciousness because they don't have a rigid conception. And he called it the saying that it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. I was just thinking about myself, and if I'm honest, I think it's probably true in certain ways. As I grow older, I seem to fall into a certain mold.
Harder to change.
It's difficult to be open to think that anything's possible. My life seems to be becoming more formed. I was wondering, in terms of practicing Krishna consciousness, is there an internal process of change which can go on despite the fact that you're getting older and your life becomes
Yeah, I think there is. Prabhupada writes about it in the Bhagavatam that although when you grow old in Krishna consciousness, you don't think of retiring. So that's a good sign. And in the Goswamis, they kept writing books even though they got older and older. And of course, he was an example of that. And so he said, I want to be enthusiastic until the last breath. and Krishna's letting me do that. But he didn't show his enthusiasm by physical movement and so forth. That reduced. But the other kept alive, certainly. And perhaps you could say it increased in a different way. When Prabhupada made his last visit from Vrindavan to England, and he was in the manor and wherever he went, but the devotees recording have it in Prabhupada Lilamrita, he was crying all the time, as for the tears are flowing, and he just gave up his hard rod of chastisement. He was just expressing gratitude, so he just changed his mood. I think as you get old, as a devotee, you may start feeling more soft-hearted. So that's a good thing. So there's a trade-off. And you have to accept the inconvenience of the different, the bodily ailments increase. And if you're attached to the body, then they can get really, you know, distressing, and your Krishna consciousness doesn't increase, and you get more and more distressed. So just to be able to cope with the bodily increased difficulties, that requires more Krishna consciousness. You see, all the leaders in ISKCON, I mean, not just the leaders, but I guess because they're prominent, one after another, they get heart attack, this attack, that attack, and then they get some relief from it, and then they keep going. And so just to deal with that takes a lot of Krishna conscious strength. Even though it's not an increase of activity, we have to face that. Yesterday's meeting was about freedom, but when I think of the choice we have, it does not appear that we have much of a choice. We can choose Krishna or Maya, but if we choose Maya, we will suffer, either immediately or after some time. If we choose Krishna, we will be transcendentally happy in the long term, but it seems that we are making the choice more out of fear of not choosing Krishna, based on knowledge. For myself, I don't think I am making the choice out of love, but more out of fear of the consequences of choosing Maya. I wondered if you could comment on this. This is a very thoughtful meditation. After my talk about freedom, I may have made it sound like we have big choices for freedom, and the more he thought about it, it seems like it's more and more confined. We don't have so much freedom. So I wrote, admitted, our margin of free expression may be small, but it shouldn't be denied. Don't be cynical to the point of saying it doesn't exist. Act on whatever freedom we have as a serious thing, even if the freedom is that I'm afraid I'll miss out if I don't choose Krishna. Prabhupada even uses the expression minute amount of free will. That's all we have. I didn't mean to make it sound bigger than it was, but it cannot be, it shouldn't be underestimated. Sri Krishna or Maya. And I told you, I was interested in the whole subject, the way it occurred to me that I thought, hey, actually everything, freedom is the pivot. You choose Krishna, you choose Guru, everything is done just out of free choice. So that's true. And if you say, well, yeah, but let's measure it and see that it's tiny. Still, the answer is tiny, but free choice. Prabhupada doesn't come down on me as by some force, like living under a communist regime, that you get Prabhupada as the guru. Who forced you? We weren't like that somebody born in the Soviet Union formally, that you're born there and so-and-so is the dictator. And you have to do what they say.